All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
Can do that and float it in to that top corner. It's that man.
Adams is going to lose the argument. Tillman and Robinson stand over it. Tillman ran into Adams. 9 minutes plus stoppage time to go.
So this run-up is telling me more power.
Look at how Vassell's giving up the entire right side of his goal. Tillman! It's in! Malik Tillman! 2-0 United States!
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight, and let's go.
Here we go! And with that, everybody, the USA is through, having won a knockout stage game for the first time in 24 years. Good guys, 2, Bosnia-Herzegovina, 0. Despite a red card to our best guy by VAR, despite a goal called back by offsides, and despite a kid from Bosnia who was born in Appleton and is playing for the other team, I cry foul on all of that. But Flo Balogun with a goal in the 45th minute, and then Malik Tillman with a glorious free kick goal that bent its way over and around and through in the 82nd minute. We're on to Seattle, and we are on to Belgium, and we are on to my man Nick Lochner, clean sheet EPL. Hello, good evening. Thank you for staying up late on a Wednesday. That was fun, wasn't it?
That was fun, Zabe. That was fun. I think you hit the nail on the head, and it was gritty. It was a team that in the past might have folded a little bit with that, might have not had the confidence. It was a gritty, hard-fought, battle adversity, and like you said, one with one of your best guys getting kicked out of the game, controversially, to be honest and fair.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that.
Yeah, but it was a rough game.
Yeah, it was a rough game, chippy game. Yeah. A lot of gamesmanship being played.
Games within the game.
A lot of flopping in there as well. But you know, that's just the way the game works. What a win! The big picture, big takeaway is the USA is clearly now on a whole new level when it comes to international soccer. I think I sent you a note right after the right at halftime, because there was a threat. There was the Balogun crossbar before the half, and I said, look, maybe it's me, but to my eyes, casual observer, that play was far more creative and far more explosive than what I used to ever recall seeing from Team USA. And so it seems like we're capable as a nation of creating truly world-class bursts of football at the highest level. And I asked you if I'm on point, and your answer was basically yes. Care to elaborate on what this casual fan noticing?
Yeah, I would say what there have been moments of brilliance, and I know I go back to Landon Donovan's amazing goal to advance the U.S. when they needed a goal at the end, and Jozy Altidore, who had some amazing goal. There have been some amazing moments. However, and we had good teams, but they felt, like the underdog story, an individual who really stepped up. This is individuals taking another step, enabled by a team around them that puts them in positions to do it. And, you know, just little things like, I know Kristen Pulisic gets hurt. Some people love him. Some people a little wishy-washy.
Really?
But when that guy's standing, what's that?
Some people are wishy-washy on Pulisic.
People don't like that he gets hurt, and he is smaller, and he can get influenced oftentimes by a game if he gets beat up a little bit. And so it's nitpicking on a superstar. Let's put it that way. But what I would say is you put him on the outside like they did on the left side tonight. And I'm not a deep expert on the X's and O's on this stuff, but I do notice that, the U.S. played inside of him because he was just drawing everybody out there. And so that opens things up for people, and that makes a big, so guys are standing on a higher floor because the team's better. And when they're doing brilliant things, it's elevated over what they used to be doing. That's the way I would think about it.
Yeah. It looks like we have stronger on-ball individual skills across the board than we've ever had. There is definitely more creative playmaking and 2-3 pass concepts that they're willing to and able to execute in just a blink of an eye. And the finishing is much better. Now, Flo Balogun is the finisher. And now his current situation is he's finished for next game against Belgium. We're going to get into that now, so let's get into it. VAR was initially introduced in soccer in Europe only for goal line calls. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's how they dipped their toe in the water.
And now here we are. Because believe it or not, you'd say to yourself, wait, how hard is it to see if a giant white and multicolored soccer ball goes over a big painted white line? And the answer is you'd be actually surprised, because if a ball hits the crossbar and it ricochets down real sharp and it hits the ground and then it spins out, it looks like it didn't go in. It might have gone in. I've seen goals, Nick, where I'm like, oh, yeah, that's actually kind of tough to see. So much like when baseball introduced replay, they did it only for what? Fair ball, foul ball on home runs. They were like, okay, we're just going to use it for this. Just like in the NHL, they said, we're just going to use it for goals and skates in the crease. And now it's all over the place. So I hate it, but then again, that's my stance on replay for everything. Now, I didn't know VAR could really dig in to the red card, yellow card thing. Tell me what the general soccer populace thinks about a guy upstairs in a booth watching 60, 120 frames per second of video, determining intent that could cause a star player like Balogun to miss a game and a half for what looked like he's playing soccer. It's rough at times.
Yeah.
What does the average fan think of VAR for cards?
I think the average fan thinks VAR should be punted. I think they think if at a minimum, it needs to be rewritten how it's used. So just like other sports, nobody, just like the NFL, nobody thinks you have to slow down a catch in the NFL and determine if it's a half a knee, a one knee. Did you have control? Did you make a football move? A catch is a catch. And the referee can call it. And there are some core fundamentals, like did the ball actually hit the ground or not, not whether you had control. And if the ref calls it on the field and that's what they see, and that's what's happening in soccer is when, like the red card today on Balogun, my phone has been blowing up with people with their opinions.
And their takes, and probably a few guys asking you, saying,
yeah,
so what did you think?
My thought is yellow card, not a red card. Because okay. when you slow it down and look at a guy's ankle at a 90-degree position and another guy's foot on it, you're like, that's a red card. I mean, he's breaking his ankle. Now, the guy ran back on the field a minute later.
Yeah.
And when you're in the action and the referee is there to see it, it's in the context of the game, not with somebody in a booth slowed down without the context. And that's what people really dislike about VAR. I'm a fan of VAR for clear and obvious, quick decisions. I'm not a fan of drawing lines, and I'm not a fan of every review should be at full speed. You have to look at it. You can't freeze frame it and try to make a determination. I don't think you should anyway. And when I go back to the Florian Balogun, I would encourage all the listeners, go look at what Messi did in the last group game when he came on and he stepped on a guy's calf and the referee didn't call it and VAR decided and the guy's calf, could have broken the guy's calf, and then he scored a goal right after that. And there's a lot of argument that, well, that's because he's Messi.
So VAR did not step in and give Messi a yellow
card when it was pretty clear. And here's the way VAR works is this. They buzz down to the field and say, we think we saw something.
Oh.
They don't make the call. Like, they don't call New York like in the NFL and say, tell me what the call is. They call down and say, we think we saw something. Here's what we think we saw. And that's why the referee runs over and he goes to the monitor and the referee looks and the referee on the field makes the final decision. Now, they're talking in his ear. And in fact, in the EPL this year, they created a rule that said all audio of VAR referee discussions is made available to the media after the game.
After the game, but not during the broadcast.
It comes in during the broadcast, but you're not listening live.
Oh, okay.
You're not listening live. So they will comment on here's what we heard, and they will play the recording. And there have been times that the Premier League leadership comes out after a game and says, based on listening to X, Y, and Z, VAR made a mistake. We suck. I mean, that's basically they've done that a couple times, and it's caused a lot of drama, enough so that if you really follow European soccer, let's say, you know, they're ready to say, put a pause on VAR, go back to what we had, and then figure out how to better implement it.
It's a game and a half suspension.
Yeah, and it's like a targeting penalty.
Yeah, and it's a call made by, I don't even know if there's a name on the guy. Is it one guy in the VAR booth that makes the call? Three? Is it a vote? Best two out of three wins? How does that work?
There's a lead referee. In fact, if you watch the pregame, they introduce the referee, the VAR refs, along with when the other refs are being introduced walking out.
Okay.
So it's funny. Most of them just stare at the thing and wave a little bit, but they're sitting in a booth and there's like a lead guy. And then kind of like the feet on the field, there's a lead guy and there's two lines refs. And in the booth, there's three guys. One guy, I believe, is responsible, but he can get input from the other two. And when they buzz down, they say, like with offsides and so forth, when it's clear and given by technology, they communicate what it is. When it comes to cards, it's it's at best a recommendation, but more we saw contact, we want you to look at it.
Now, there's another part to this, which is me being a once every 3 years and 11 months soccer tourist. And we'll get into that in a second.
All right.
I'm like vaguely thinking red card. I think that comes with another game suspension, but I'm not really hearing the announcers say that or make a big deal of it. Maybe they've changed the rule because they have certainly changed some rules. I was texting some buddies. They were like, he's out for the next game too if they win. And I'm like, oh, shit. And of course, I went to Grok and I asked the question. It's like, yes, it's a suspension for the next game. And then it says FIFA can only add to that suspension if they look at it and say it was really egregious and we kind of missed it. There's basically no lightening of the load. So there is no hope, correct, that they say, never mind on this red card to Flo Balogun?
Not on this one. Not on this one.
No.
It was too, I don't think it should have been a red card, but it was close enough
that they're not going to
go against it. And what if you get two yellow cards, Zabe, that's why you'll hear the announcers say, oh, this player's on a yellow. So if you're in the same game and get a second yellow, in fact, there are teams' strategy to run at weaker opponents, to be taken down by those opponents so that that guy can get a yellow card, and then you start running at him nonstop because – right? So there's strategy behind it. If you get the second yellow, it's the same as a red.
First of all, the yellows carry with you as a player in the World Cup all the way through the World Cup?
Nope. So the way the yellows reset, three game runs.
Okay. All right.
So three group games and then the 32, 16, and 8, and they reset after that. You basically can have two yellow cards in those three games. The third card means you're suspended for the next game.
Okay. What? Well, all right. I thought two yellows got you a one.
That's
game
in a game.
In one single game.
Two yellows.
Right, three yellows.
You
three yellows when you're accumulating them over multiple matches ends up in a suspension.
What about a red card counts as two yellows.
All right. So what about had Bosnia won? What about their coach who got a yellow card for picking up the ball and throwing a tantrum when he was on the sideline?
No, I mean, that's real, too. Coaches, you know, it's kind of like in the high school basketball when the coach gets a seatbelt, you know, hey, go sit on the bench, can't stand up and talk anymore. Like, they get that kind of stuff.
Have you ever seen a coach get a red card?
Oh, yeah. A lot, Zabe. And
wow.
and then they go sit in the stands. They're out. It's like a manager getting kicked out of baseball. Yeah, same thing. And then depending on the reason, I've seen leagues, you know, give them a three-game suspension, give them a one-game suspension. Like, there's different rules in there.
Right.
But yeah.
So anyway, it's a pretty big fucking deal that our best player, who's already scored how many goals now? Three? Four goals in this tournament?
What would that be? It might be four. Four goals.
Yeah. Our best player is going to be out for this incredibly steepening ascent on Mount World Cup as we get harder and harder and higher and higher. Pretty big fucking deal. And it was not apparent to any of the casual viewers like me that that's the situation they were in. And I'm glad to see Darren Revelle on Twitter said 99% of the people watching have no idea how a red card works. The Fox broadcasters just let 2 minutes expire without telling people that Balogun is gone for the next game if the U.S. advances. Adding that this is insane. The majority of these viewers are not watching MLS or EPL. If I'm the producer of the broadcast, I tell the broadcasters in their ear, you must say over and over, if the U.S. advances, Balogun is gone. They really sort of downplayed it. Now, I understand. I bet I can guess why that was. Part of it is the announcers deep down don't like to spoon feed us casuals our mashed peas. They don't like it. They really wish we fucking knew these rules deep down. That's number one. And number two is that there is a superstition of, hey, man, it's only 1-0. We got to win this game first. Are my instincts sort of in the right ballpark as to why that was the way it was?
Yeah, so I would say sort of. I actually think in this situation they overlooked it a little bit. I actually
overlook it? Best player is out for a game and a half. Fuck.
No, it's true. I think they were solely focused on what's going to happen in this game now that he's out. I think that's what they're focused on. Somebody should have said something. But I will say it's very interesting, Zabe, I've talked to you about my enjoyment of soccer and how I got into it and stuff. What I dislike sometimes is there are so many soccer fans online that are ripping on Fox's coverage for being too spoon-fed. So, for example, if you look at the score clock and all of that up in the upper left-hand corner, and it will say red card down to 10 men. For any soccer enthusiast who knows soccer,
They know that.
You shouldn't have to say down to 10 men. The red card means down to 10 men, right? So, like, the Fox is doing stuff like that.
That's the purists. Yeah, that's the purists being morons because this game, which is going to draw a massive number, as will the next game. When is the Belgium game in?
That is Monday, July 6th, Seattle, 7 p.m., I think.
8. All right. So this game is going to draw massive numbers, which is great. The Monday game is going to draw even bigger, massive numbers. Yep. And the number of people watching in bars, in restaurants, all over the place is huge. And to have that on the screen is important. A little graphic that says, oh, by the way, we're down to 10 men. You just got to do it. And the purists have to get over it. But that said, I just felt that it was a little bit of an oversight. Generally speaking, how would you rate the Fox coverage? I got three components. One would be the nuts and bolts production, camera angles, replays, close-ups, graphics. The next is the actual game announcers for not just our games but others. Mm-hmm. And then the studio stuff, which they got a lot of hours, a lot of minutes to fill, so we got to keep that in mind. Give me a quick grade and thought or two on the nuts and bolts first of Fox's efforts.
I think Fox gets an A for the actual game coverage.
Okay.
I like what they're doing with the games. I love the pageantry they show at the beginning. I can't remember the categories exactly, Zabe. Did you talk about like studio hosts and stuff like that?
We'll get to that. But far as I thought they had some really nice long focal length, tight shots of players' expressions. I thought on the free kick by Tillman, they had a super slow-mo tight shot on his face as he's getting ready to kick it. And he makes this little glance like that with his eyes right before he sets in. All right. I thought that was chef's kiss production.
Yeah, I think it's an A. I think they're the production of the match is an A. And if you wanted to go all nerd about it, like, the technology they are using in this World Cup is truly cutting edge, and they're doing it purposely. And they talk about that, the cameras they have and the purposes of all these different cameras. And by the way, we're getting there's different feeds for different parts of the world. Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Now FIFA runs the main feed. And you know how there's hydration breaks, right? If you watch Telemundo, they don't cut away.
Yeah.
Right? But Fox
Telemundo
does.
did not sell their hydration breaks either because they just were like, it's too much work. Or they're purists. They are like super purists.
Yeah. But like, because you can go look at FIFA coverage online, like post game, and there's the FIFA coverage that they give to Fox, but then there's all these other angles from all these other cameras that maybe got used in the coverage or maybe didn't. And I know people go nerd out on that stuff. It's interesting. So I give it, the production's been, I think, great.
Okay. Nuts and bolts is an A. By the way, one camera I don't think they can use because of the nature of soccer is that spider cam that they use for football, because the ball can go really high at any time and can hit those wires or that camera at any time. There's basically no safe place to park a spider cam hovering above the field. So
not above
they don't
the
really
field.
Use
they
that.
Do have some
on the sides.
On the sides.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So there was that. The game announcers. I don't know who is the lead play-by-play on this game for us.
Well, this was who was it? It was Stu Holden and was it
I'll look it up right now.
Yeah, look it up. I'm trying to remember that he's number one, and then Ian Dark and Landon, I think, kind of get the number two. And
Ian Dark's the Brit.
He's the Brit.
That's pretty famous soccer announcer.
Yeah, yeah. I think Stu Holden's doing a great job, and his partner, I think those guys are good. I
what
like
does
listening
Stu Holden call? Does he call MLS?
Yeah, he does MLS.
Stu
most
Holden.
Of the Americans call MLS.
Right. Stu Holden along, Stu Holden as the match analyst. John Strong does play-by-play.
John Strong
and Stu Holden with the All-American girl, Jenny Taft, doing sideline stuff. And Tom Rinaldi. Tom Rinaldi gets so many fucking assignments, man. That guy must have photos of somebody. I mean, a really nice guy and a clean look and does good work. But Jesus, everything's got Rinaldi. It's like, why? All right, so the announcers, you think they're doing a good, solid job. All right, let's talk about the studio stuff.
I think the top of the announcers are, I'm not a big fan of when you start getting down into the third and fourth bench players of the announcers.
Okay. All right. And then what about the studio stuff? I've read more about the controversy with everybody hating on Alexi Lalas and the chippiness between him and Zlatan than I've actually listened or watched, but I started a little bit more listening and watching today. My first takeaway was, man, it is hard to pick up the accent and the cadence of both Thierry Henry and Zlatan on the same set, but I'm going to give it a shot.
So here's the way I think about it. Rebecca Lowe, who runs the show, is a professional. She is excellent, and she does the NBC Sports Peacock English Premier League show during the EPL season. She's brilliant. Okay.
Okay.
Thierry Henry is what I would call like the patriarch. He's like the superstar player. He had a huge career in the EPL. He played for France. He is very famous outside of the United States, and people love him. And he just has a very even keel. Zlatan is Mr. First Person. Okay. And he's got his arrogance meter up on extra high on purpose. I don't know if you remember, he actually played for the LA Galaxy in the MLS.
I do remember when they got him, and it was a big deal.
It's a big deal. He's a great player. He's very full of himself. He leans into that. When he left LA, he took out a huge ad in the LA Times and a huge billboard. And it was, think of it as like a full page length paper. But all he did was at the top say, "Dear LA, you're welcome, Zlatan." And it was the whole page.
Like, he leans into that, huh?
So if you know that history about him, I enjoy listening to him because I know his shtick. And then he plays off of Lalas, who has been at ESPN years ago and now Fox doing U.S. soccer coverage for 25, 30 years. And he kind of plays the heel.
Okay. So they're playing roles. Yeah.
They're playing roles. Lalas takes, and I think this is fair game to say, Lalas works for Fox. He's been in support of the Republican Party for years. He was in the White House when they were making announcements, standing next to Sepp Blatter, the FIFA head, standing next to Trump, standing at right. And
so no wonder
there's
why
a lot of
the
people
audience
in the soccer
him.
Media that don't like him.
Yeah. Okay. So no, that explains a lot right there. By the way, Rebecca Lowe, she is very talented, great at what she does. British American. She reminds me, as I was like, God, she reminds me of some celebrity. Remember Jane Krakowski, who played Jenna Maroney on 30 Rock?
Oh, yeah.
That's who Rebecca Lowe gives me strong vibes on.
Yeah.
Very lovely woman. blonde hair, beautiful smile, talented British accent. You had me at hello.
All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, craps, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart. Get paid.
Okay, let's talk about this Milwaukee Messi kid. Then I'm going to get your experience in Dallas before we're done tonight because you were at a match all down right there just a few days ago. But this guy, Esmir Barakagar.
By the way, that's how I pronounce it, Zabe. That's how I pronounce
the names,
it.
The names on the Bosnia team were so unpronounceable. It was a joke. Yeah. But Esmir Barakagar was born in Appleton, Wisconsin. Get yes. the fuck out of here. And he wasn't born in Appleton for five hot minutes and then whisked away back to Bosnia. He grew up playing soccer in good old America at various levels and various pro and semi-pro and sort of developmental youth soccers. And then because he's got dual citizenship, he decides to play for Bosnia. They call him the Milwaukee Messi, although we know Appleton is not Milwaukee. How did we not somehow file an appeal to go, no, 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 no. Look here, buddy. You're with us.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about this before, Zabe. We convinced, we recruit guys who have other nationalities like Balogun, and we recruit guys or we lose guys who have American, but they have right. other nationality. His parents fled the Yugoslav Bosnia-Herzegovina war mm-hmm. in the 90s. They came to the United States. He got legal citizenship. And the bottom line is, he played for the Milwaukee Wave, if you're familiar with that club.
Yes.
And then he went to the Chicago Fire. And he was like, grew up in their youth programs. And he plays for a very large club in the Netherlands right now. He's a real deal.
He's a really good player.
He wouldn't have the position on the U.S. men's national team that he does at Bosnia.
Oh, really?
So I don't
as good
think
as
so.
He is, he might not make our starting 11?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I'm not a scout, but right. when I've read up on him and I've written about him before, my analysis is he felt he had a better chance over there. He played in Europe anyway. He did have his parents, he talks about he felt a connection to Bosnia and everything. But I think he played for the U.S. men's national team in 2023. He got one game or maybe two. And then in 2024, he committed to Bosnia instead.
Right.
And by the way,
I get it. We recruit. Yeah. Everyone else recruits as well. That said, he kind of fucking owes us, okay, Nick?
He
fled a war-torn country. We took him in. Lady Liberty, open up your arms to ye huddled masses and ye refugees. And this is how you pay us back? Okay, fine. We beat you anyway. Down one man. For half the match.
Took him down.
Yeah, no. All right, he's probably a great kid, by the way. I say this all very much tongue-in-cheek.
He's 21 years old.
Yeah, he's 21. Okay, so your experience in Dallas. You were there for, I forget the teams in the match that you saw.
Yeah, it was Norway versus Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire.
It was
a phenomenal game.
At Jerry World.
Yeah, it was at Jerry World. It was okay. I got a call on that. Let's see, the game was on Tuesday. I got a call on Friday night late saying I got an extra ticket. You want to come down? I booked a flight. I got a hotel on Friday. On Monday, flew in Monday. On Monday night, we went to the Fan Fest. So all of these cities have a Fan Fest, which is not at the stadium. And in Dallas, the Fan Fest is open every day during the World Cup. And we went to that on Friday night and watched Morocco-Netherlands. And it's on the it's right in the shadow of the Cotton Bowl. So it's the Texas State Fair grounds. And it holds, I think, 35,000 people. It was packed. There's an amphitheater there where they play music and stuff. They had all the big screen TVs up on it, and people are sitting up in the lawn and in the chairs, and every close goal, the people are going crazy. You know, you saw every jersey from everywhere. So that was cool. On Tuesday, the game was at noon. And one of the things that is just amazing, so my hotel is 4 miles from there. The lobby, people getting their, eggs and biscuits and gravy, and it's just packed with people in jerseys. And everybody was heading over to the Jerry World by 9 a.m. And we got there at 9:45. If you picture Jerry World, or if you know any NFL stadium, they put temporary fencing up probably 200 yards away from the stadium. And that's like the outer perimeter, and that's what you enter to get in. You go through security and everything. We got there at 9:45 for a noon game, and I would bet it was already 50% full from what we could. I mean,
breezed through the security cattle call that they set up.
I mean, they had everything's bigger in Texas, I understand, but like they had like in the one exit entrance we went in, there were like 20 to 30 machines to walk through and all that. I mean, it was amazing.
You said the logistics and the fan experience was 10 of 10, which makes me think, okay, we know FIFA, they're a bunch of gangsters, but the mob runs a great operation at the end of the day. Yeah.
Yeah. When you walk through the security, it's like a carnival inside, right? It's all, so outside the stadium, it's all set up for watching. Like there's TVs out there watching the games. There's places for international fans who are traveling there to all meet together, and they're all doing their chants. There's like a Home Depot stage, and they have the brackets all up built in blocks. I mean, it's a lot of activations. Outside.
These are activations, as they call them in marketing, you know, live event stuff. Yeah. And that's good.
But the other thing I would quick say is and I don't know how much longer you want me to go here, but what's crazy is we got into the stadium we stayed out there about an hour. We got into the stadium at 10:45. I bet 60% of the people were in the stadium by then. Now, it was hot, and it's air conditioned in there, so I can understand that. But they played the U.S. national anthem. They do it an hour before the game for the host country, wherever the host country is. That's an hour before the game. And I swear it was 60 to 70% full. The whole place and the concourse never were just stopped. Everybody's singing the national anthem. And this is an hour before the game even starts. And by, I would say, let's call it 11:30 for a 12 o'clock game, 11:40, 90% of the people were in the seats or about in their seats.
Ready
for all of the pre-match, the flags being rolled out, the anthems, truly phenomenal. And for this match, Ivory Coast had some great fans. However, they were outnumbered 10-1 by Norway.
Yeah.
And Norway was rowing the boat, and they let them bring in their drums and their, they had one guy had a megaphone. It was truly amazing. Like he was across the stadium from me, but you could hear the microphone. He'd say something, and every Norwegian fan, when he would say something, would stand up and then chant something back. I mean, it was pretty cool.
So in other words, FIFA is good about allowing in their hoodinkers and their doodunkers and the drums and the vuvuzelas and the flags and the banners, because they know that's part of the experience.
It's part of the experience. This is not a stay in the parking lot. Oh, shoot, it's about time to kick off. Go get in line trying to get in the stadium, and you're stuck and you miss kickoff, yeah. But you want to get
typical
a beer in line.
American dynamic of, it's the fucking Jaguars today. I'm definitely going to pound a few more beers in the parking lot before I stand in line at security. This is a monumental event. That's part of the appeal of the World Cup. These are seismic sporting moments for entire nations that are trying to absolve their suffering. Like Mexico two nights ago was lit.
Crazy.
Like the broadcast, you could hear the energy pouring through your television inside the stadium. And then afterwards, the celebration shots on whatever boulevard that is, with whatever giant statue they have in Mexico City, with the throngs and throngs and throngs of fans, and the fireworks, I was convinced, Nick, that's AI. That can't be real. What are all those people doing there? And the answer is they were there to show up and show out for their country that they love dearly. You know, Mexicans are great people. They're unfortunately trapped in a country that selling drugs is way too profitable. So all the cartels run the country. And if Mexico could ever somehow shed themselves of that, boy, would that country fly, because the people are great and they love Mexico. They're super festive and they party and they just love soccer so much. And I didn't know until they finally won that game that they had never had a fifth game in the World Cup in their history. Yep. Holy shit.
And I think this is an interesting thing. England now goes to Mexico City at altitude in the smog.
That's going to be amazing, by the way.
Did you hear, Zabe, what the fans for Mexico City did to Ecuador?
They parked outside the hotel, this huge high-rise hotel where the who were they playing Mexico
Ecuador.
Again? Ecuador. And they just lit off fireworks. They honked horns.
All night.
They blew vuvuzelas like all night long. And he couldn't stop them.
Yeah. Soccer snob would call that they're getting CONCACAF'd. Because that was always the complaint, because CONCACAF is what the U.S. sits in with Mexico, Canada, and the Caribbean and South and Central America.
Yes.
That's the league.
That's our
and
league.
When you travel to Central America, you get CONCACAF'd.
You get CONCACAF'd. Yeah. That's a rogue league. It's a rough league, man.
It's a rough
league.
You better
buckle up for that. Yeah. I was wondering, there must have been TVs scattered throughout that whole boulevard, because the people were there packed in, they had to at least be within eye shot of the game, right?
No, somehow. For sure. There's these fan fests. My guess is they used that location for the fan fest, and the one in Mexico City holds 90,000 to 100,000 people.
Oh, and it's going to be packed again when they play England. When is England?
That I believe is Sunday night.
Okay.
I'm verifying though. It could be Monday. I'm going to verify that though.
All right. That's going to be good stuff. I'm just looking at our text.
It's Monday. Yeah. It's Sunday night.
I texted you after France won their game. I said, Jesus, I just watched the French highlights. They would slaughter us. And you said probably, but what fun it will be. And then your boy Patrick says, fuck the French. We're the reason they don't speak German. And I go, well, that's correct, but fucking Mbappe. Fucking Mbappe is so sick. I'd love to be able to have that chance to get on the stage. They're very good. But you know what? We're good. Are we very good? Probably not. But it's soccer. The beautiful game sometimes works in mysterious ways. So that's very exciting. I unfortunately sent tonight, Nick, a text that was meant for a different text string. And as soon as I said it, I was like, fuck. Because I said to my guys who were a little bit shitting on soccer and the flopping and the offsides and the red card and whatnot, I said, Flo had 4 goals in the first half by my count. He had the one that counted. He had the foul in the box they didn't call, said play on. Had the goal called back by offsides. And he had his crossbar. That's 4 goals. And then he gets a 1.5 match suspension for playing soccer. This is bullshit. This is why I ignore the sport for 3 years and 11 months at a time. And then I was like, fuck, I sent that to Nick. And he's going to look at me in a different light now. Please don't hold that against me. That was a momentary little rant with some other little soccer haters. I hope you can tell by my enthusiasm and at least my general casual knowledge with you on these chats that I am indeed into the World Cup.
I take no offense. In fact,
okay,
it's I'm going to say it's part of the reason why I started this newsletter as I did, because I would come back from Europe on these trips and have nobody to talk to about soccer, except for, and I don't want to go against soccer people, but it's like, I'm not a soccer savant. I just really enjoy the sport and I've found how much I like, and I don't like, there's so many people that love sports who just think of soccer kind of the old way. Like, and I'm not saying you necessarily, but like who are American sports centric. And it's almost kind of a badge of honor to, well, I'm an American. I can't like soccer the way we're Americans. And
right.
I think it's I think we need people in the tent who are new to soccer. If I have been getting texts, you know, and thanks to you for putting me on, but I've been getting texts from, I think, some of your listeners and some of the response on Twitter of people saying, I don't know that much about soccer, but I'd love to follow these guys after the World Cup. Where can I go to see where these guys play? How do I learn more about the Premier League? Stuff like that.
Yeah, no, and that's good. And I said to you after I unleashed that wayward text that was not really meant for you, I said, I do love, though, that you love it, Nick. And trust me, the sport doesn't need me. It's doing just fine without me. I just, for me, there's certain deal breakers, like the flopping is obvious and yet the offsides is imperceptible. And that is so out of balance to me. That's so wild. Like, I'll look at a play and I know the offsides rule and be like, I don't see it, Elaine. And then maybe upon VAR and the graphic, I'll go, okay, I guess so. I just would make that simpler, for God's sakes. I hate the notion that goals are so hard to get, and then you get one, and they're like, no, you were offsides. Even though the offsides goals in this game by the U.S., there's two of them, one by Pulisic, one by Flo, they were legit. Yep. Like, the announcers are like, yeah, no, that's offsides. I get it. I get that goals are supposed to be hard. I get that soccer is this amazing 22-person flowing chess match that evolves over 90 minutes and stoppage time and now hydration break time. But it's a large-scale chess match where teams have to gauge how aggressive they want to be, the tactics they want to use, the will to be present when you're really tired and you're getting beat up. I get it. Then you're not supposed to have bing, 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 score. Oh, you know, 9-8, you know, Manchester United. That would suck. I get that. But just a few tweaks I would make.
Yeah.
When you say you want me in that tent, I'm in the tent for a couple more weeks. The U.S. is on to Seattle. The game, by the way, is kind of a pick'em. I went to go look it up right now. As a public service announcement, the place to wager responsibly on the World Cup is at mybookie.com. Mybookie.com. Promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. Your first bet gets covered up to $500 with the bet back bonus. Make your first bet. If it doesn't hit, get it back when you opt in. Grab your bonus now and get your club on the board. Bettors win together at mybookie. The U.S. was pretty heavy favorites in this game. The goal, the margin, the spread was USA minus 1.25.
And I'm 1.5.
Why? It on my bookie, it said 1.25, which is interesting. Whatever. They covered the spread. They won both the money line in regulation and the overall win if it happened to go to penalty kicks. So that's good. Go to mybookie.com. Promo code ZABE if you would like to responsibly wager on the World Cup. What are the big matches on Thursday?
I've been enjoying them all, but
we got three matches on Thursday.
Three matches. You got Spain, Austria. Okay. If the U.S. were to beat Portugal, Spain's on the horizon. Austria is going to make that. They're a big underdog. I wouldn't be surprised if it were tight in the second half.
You Portugal said if USA plays, beats Portugal,
I meant Belgium.
I meant Belgium.
Apologies. Yeah. Right. Portugal plays Croatia, and Switzerland plays Algeria. So it'll be, I mean, they're all good, but it's nice to have a U.S. men's national team to talk about between now and next Monday to see if they can go farther than they've gone before against a European team that historically we would be considerable underdogs against, but not this time.
All right. Clean sheet, EPL, Nick Lochner, L-O-C-H-N-E-R. Just a Wisconsin guy, born and raised, red-blooded American sports fan who's grown to love soccer from his various business trips over across the pond in England, who is a welcoming big tent guy when it comes to soccer. So he will not tut-tut. Look up his newsletter, Google search it, and we will be talking again next week as this thing winds into even more exciting territory. Thank you, Nick.
Look forward to it, Zabe.
That'll do it for us today. Thank you so much for listening to the Zabecast. As always, rate and review, spread the word, and we will see you next time. USA, USA, USA.
You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.